kunya vihare Paramahamsa Paramitakacharya, Sattva Satishji Shimai, His Divine Grace, Abhaya Chananada Bhaktivedanta Goswami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Anantakoti Vaishnav Vrinda Ki Jai, Namacharya Shri Das Thakur Ki Jai, Param se kaho shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shitvaita gadadha shri vasati gaur bhakta vrinda gijaya shri shri radha krishna gopakabhata sayam kun radha kunda giri gover dan gijaya vrinda vatam gijaya maturanam gijaya navadiptam gijaya jagadavasami gijaya yamanamai gijaya Srimati Lasi Devi Gijaya, Samveda Bhakta Vrindi Gijaya, Gaura Premananda. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Gijaya. Here in New Govardhan. We have people watching on the internet, so I just wanted to mention where we are so they know where we are. Oh. Thank you. So, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 15, Text 32. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Evam Sumantritartas Te Gurunartha Nudarshana Hitva Tri Vishtapam Jagmur Girvanaha Kama Rupinaha Evam Sumantritartastehi Gurunartanu darshana Yitvatri vishtapam jagmur Yirvana kamarupinaha Evam sumantritartastegi Gurunartanu darshana Yitvatri vishtapam jagmur Nirvana kamarupinaha Evam sumantritartastehi Gurunartanu darshana Yitvatri vishtapam jagmur Nirvana kamarupinaha
Tataste,
Sumanchuta, being well advised, Ardhana, about duties, Te, the demigods, they, Guruna, by their spiritual master, Artha Anudarshana, whose instructions were quite befitting. Hitva, giving up. Trivishtapam, the heavenly kingdom. Jagmohu, went. Girvanaha, the demigods. Kamarupinaha, who could assume any form they liked. Translation. Shukadev Goswami continued, the demigods, being thus advised by Brahaspati for their benefit, immediately accepted his words. Assuming forms according to their desire, they left the heavenly kingdom and scattered without being observed by the demons. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The word Kamarupanaha indicates that the demigods, the inhabitants of the heavenly planets, can assume any form they desire. Thus it was not at all difficult for them to remain incognito before the eyes of the demons. So these are short purports, so maybe we'll just finish up the chapter here, and some of the verses don't have any purports. So next text, Deveshvarta Nilineshu Balir Virochana Purim Deva Dhanim Adishtaya Vasham Ninye Jagatriham. When the demigods had disappeared, Bali Maharaj, the son of Virochan, entered the heavenly kingdom, and from there he brought the three worlds under his control. So text 34. Tam Vishvajayanam Shishyam Vrgava Shishya Vatsalaha Shottena Haya Medhanam Anuvratam Mayajihan. The Brahmana descendants of Bhrigu, being very pleased with their disciple who had conquered the entire universe, now engaged him in performing 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices. So, Prabhupada explains that we have seen in the dispute between Maharaj Prithu and Indra that when Maharaj Prithu wanted to perform 100 Ashwamedha yagyas, Indra wanted to impede him, for it is because of such great sacrifices that Indra was made king of heaven. Here the Brahmana descendants of Bhrigu decided that although Bali Maharaj was situated on the throne of Indra, he would not be able to stay there unless he performed such sacrifices. Therefore, they advised Maharaj Bali to perform at least as many Ashwamedha yagyas as Indra. The word Ayajayan indicates that all the Brahmanas induced Bali Maharaj to perform such sacrifices. I think we'll just finish up the chapter. Text 35. Atatastananubhavena bhuvanatraya vishrutam kirtim dikshu vitandhana sareja udurariva. When Bali Maharaj performed these sacrifices, He gained a great reputation in all directions throughout the three worlds. Thus he shone in his position like the brilliant moon in the sky. And finally, the last text. Abhubhujescha shriham sridham dvija devo palambitam kritakritjam ivatmanam manyamano mahamanaha. Because of the favor of the brahmanas, the great soul Bali Maharaj, thinking himself very satisfied, became very opulent and prosperous and began to enjoy the kingdom. So Prabhupada explains that the brahmanas are called Dvija Deva and the kshatriyas are generally called Nara Deva. The word Deva actually refers to the supreme personality of Godhead. The brahmanas guide human society in becoming happy by satisfying Lord Vishnu. And according to their advice, the kshatriyas, who are called Nara Deva, keep law and order so that other people, namely the Vaishyas and Shudras, may properly follow regular principles. In this way, people are gradually elevated to Krishna consciousness. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 15th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Bali Maharaj Conquers the Heavenly Planets. So, Om Gana Timadanda Shah, Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Gena, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this is a very interesting part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And even though it's the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's the prelude, or as they say in movie terms, the prequel. Everyone knows what a prequel is and a sequel?
When before?
Yeah, a prequel, just like if you have a movie, the prequel is the movie that goes before the movie that you're familiar with, you know, the first movie. And the sequel is the movie that goes afterward. You may have many sequels, many prequels, and that's, of course, many different popular films, which we won't mention in Bhagavatam class. So I don't want to put any of you in Maya at this particular point. You know, I can mention one like Star Wars or something like that. So, which everybody knows is one of my favorites. So in any case, this 8th canto is the prequel to the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So you may ask, you know, why is it the prequel and how is it the prequel? How does it lead up to the 10th canto? Doesn't the 9th canto lead up to the 10th canto? Of course, the 9th canto, in an ontological sense or a philosophical sense, leads up. But in a pastime sense, the 8th canto actually leads to the 10th canto. And I'll explain what I mean by that. So that's the whole story. That once upon a time, the demigods were enjoying their power over the demons. And actually, there's two forces in the universe. The demons and the demigods, like the dark side of the force. Anyway, not going to get into that. So, and it's interesting also, we read in this canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, how Lord Brahma wants to make sure there's always some demons in the universe. You read previously in this volume how at one point the demigods were ready to destroy, annihilate the demons. So you would think, hey, that's pretty good. Demigods can get rid of all the demons, no more demons, fantastic, let's have a good time, let's party. But it's not like that. Lord Brahma said to the demigods, sent a message, stop fighting, because we need demons. Now, why do we need demons? Well, I'll explain. We need demons. We all need demons. Because as far as the demigods are concerned, everything is so nice there, they need some opposition. An easy life, Prabhupada said, in Krishna consciousness, don't go well together. Just like if everything was nice in the material world, something like the heavenly planets, where everybody smells nice, looks nice, no disease, no problems. Everybody's, you know, super attractive. Then you sort of start to get laid back. You understand the expression laid back? That means lazy, just complacent. You're just feeling, you know, everything's beautiful in this world. Just like there is a, one time I went to Walt Disney World with Jai Patakumaris, who was bona fide. So, you know, if you have to be, go to some place like that, you go with a devotee. So we went on a date to Walt Disney World, and they had this nice doll display. Everything is wonderful in its own way, and everybody is feeling all warm and fuzzy in their hearts. And so the weather was perfect, just like there's one place in the Earth planet where Prabhupada said is probably the only place where there's material happiness, that's called Hawaii. And there, people don't have so much of an impetus for devotional service, just like I was saying before class, there's not many people here, but in Hawaii, nobody's there for Bhagavatam class, because that's the time of surfing. You know, I asked, where's the devotees? Oh, surf's up. Okay. Hare Krishna. I should give Bhagavatam class on the beach. So if everything goes well in the material world, then, you know, why should we surrender? Why should I chant Hare Krishna? Why should I pray to Krishna? So Krishna is so kind, he makes things go bad. There's actually this rule. I mean, the non-devotees have come up with this rule. If something could go wrong, it will go wrong. You ever heard of that rule before?
Yes.
Is it named for what's
Murphy's
the
law.
Murphy's Law. Yeah, I forgot the name of it. It's Murphy's Law. If something can go bad, it will go bad. And you got to predict for it, and you got to pray to the deities. I mean, it's like this morning, I was praying to the deities, not because something went bad in my own life, but I was praying to the deities, you know, and I have some disciples who are just like really in Maya. I said, Krishna, you know, save them. You've got to do, call off your Maya. So anyway, it's an impetus to pray to Krishna, take shelter of Krishna, because the demigods, just like it's described in the first verse we read today, how the demigods can assume different forms. So they use that power sometimes to do nonsense things, like Indra. He assumed the form of Gautama Rishi one time to have a relationship with Gautama Rishi's wife. You know that story? Ahalya? Famous story. And then Gautama Rishi cursed his wife to become disincarnate, in other words, invisible. Some stories say like a stone. Anyway, there's two different ways of expressing that story. So, you know, the demigods just go crazy when they have a sense gratification. Indra sometimes is sitting with his wife, and his guru comes in, and he doesn't even say, Hi, Gurudev. What to speak of offering obeisances. Can you imagine that? Like your spiritual master comes into the room, you're sitting with your wife, you know. Oh, who's that? Anyway, so, you know, because they become complacent. So there's a need for problems in the universe. There's a need for demons. And therefore, Bali Maharaj, who is actually a devotee, a pure devotee of the Lord, is heading up the demons. He's doing the service, which is really interesting because people ask the question, you know, Bali Maharaj is such a great devotee, you know, grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. Why is he taking charge of the demons? Why doesn't he just change sides? Right? I mean, that makes sense, doesn't it? That Bali Maharaj would say, hey, you know, demons, you know, go to hell. I'm joining the good guys. But he doesn't do that because that's his service to be in charge. I mean, like the story of Vritrasura, too. You know the story in the Bhagavatam, Chitraketu? He was cursed to become a demon. He was a great devotee. Parvati cursed him. And he had to do the service of fighting with Indra. You all know that story or no? I think most of you know that story. So the demons are necessary. Opposition is necessary. Prabhupada said, without opposition, where's the chance for glorious victory? Not only is it necessary to keep us on our toes, to keep devotees on their toes, but for pure devotees, opposition is necessary to glorify them. Like we're hearing about Prabhupada during this year of coming to America and undergoing so many austerities, heart attacks on the boats, all these things happen. So why didn't Krishna just make it easy? Prabhupada's a pure devotee. He doesn't need opposition to be pure. You know, he's a Nitya-siddha devotee. Why didn't Prabhupada just like get on a flower airplane coming to America? Actually, Prabhupada told us one time I was there. He was in Dallas, Texas. I arranged the reception for Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, I could have come on flying carpet, Prabhupada. Or I could have come by mantra. And so all of a sudden, flying carpet sounds like something out of the Arabian Nights story. Or I could have come by mantra, but instead I came by plane. So the reporters asked Prabhupada, so why'd you come by airplane then? Prabhupada said, just to be one with you. You know, so you could relate with me. So, because the pure devotee has all mystic powers. So you can imagine the scenario, you know, Prabhupada flies to America for the first time. He's greeted by thousands of Vaishnavas. Finally, he's come to save us. End of story. Quite a boring story. Or you could imagine the Mahabharata, for example. Okay, Duryodhana is born, and he surrenders to the Pandavas. Yudhisthira says, please accept my obeisances. I understand you're a better person. End of story. Boring story. No Mahabharata war, no Bhagavad Gita, no Arjuna surrendering, nothing. This is one of these boring million and one stories. Like, you know, everybody gets along, husband and wife get along, and they live happily ever after. Quite boring. It's like TV shows they used to have in the 1950s. You know, just that everybody is happy. So the point is, there's a reason for all this opposition. Let's say we're the pure devotee. Let's get back to the story about Prabhupada. The reason for that is it glorifies Prabhupada. Krishna arranges the opposition for his pure devotees to glorify them. So they're struggling, and it's just amazing what Prabhupada went through. You know, we were speaking last night at Rupa Vilas's house that Prabhupada had two heart attacks on the boat coming over to America, the Jaladutta. And most of you, you're young, you don't know what a heart attack is. But a heart attack is a serious thing. When you have a heart attack, you don't just like get up and start preaching Krishna consciousness. You say, take me away, take me to the hospital. Oh, please, help me, I'm in pain. And, you know, maybe for 6 months later, you'll get back on your feet and you start giving Bhagavatam class again. But Prabhupada, you know, immediately gets off the boat like fire. You know, so that glorifies Prabhupada. The opposition, Prabhupada got gored by a bull when he was in India, and he went on preaching Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada didn't have money to pay for food, so he was just spending all of his money on paper and printing. So all these things glorify a pure devotee. But in this particular case with the demigods, this opposition is making them more Krishna conscious. So getting back to the point, as I mentioned before, this is the prequel to the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And also in reference to the last verse we read about the brahmanas and worshipping the brahmanas and becoming powerful. This whole story starts with Indra and the demigods enjoying the heavenly planets. And as they're enjoying the heavenly planets, Indra's riding on his elephant called Airavata. Big elephant. It actually has four tusks. And he's feeling really good about himself. And he passes this sage. It's a story of brahmanas of getting cursed by brahmanas. He passes the sage Durvasa Muni. Now the word Durvasa means someone with a bad temper. You definitely don't want to upset Durvasa Muni. I mean, if you please him, you can get anything you want. Like Kunti, she got the ability to call the demigods because she pleased Durvasa Muni. And therefore she had her children later on, the Pandavas and previously Karna. So, anyway, so Durvasa Muni sees Indra on the elephant and he feels, well, he should honor Indra. So he gives Indra a garland. And so you think that Indra, you know, sitting on his elephant, there's this nice sage there, you put the garland on, thank you very much, Maharaj, all glories to Prabhupada, because he didn't know about Prabhupada. But instead of doing that, he takes the garland, doesn't put it around his neck, he puts it on the elephant. And the elephant stomps it into the ground. Okay. Then what happens, I'm just going to summarize the whole 8th canto here in 10 minutes or less. I'll try to do it quickly because we have to finish by 8:30. So, or it says, yeah, 8:15. Anyway. So what happens is that the elephant stomps on the garland. Durvasa curses Indra, and then Indra and the demigods, they lose everything because they've offended a Vaishnava. or he is a Vaishnava, he's an expansion of Lord Shiva, even though he has a bad temper. I mean, sometimes we meet devotees with bad tempers, don't we? Anyway, so he had some challenges. Let's see, I don't want to offend Durvasa Muni. Thank you. So, the demons take over the heavenly planets again. This is going back and forth. You know, demons take over, demigods take over. And the demigods are all worried. And so, as I was pointing out in the beginning of this discussion, when things happen, then they go to Krishna. So what happens? They go to Krishna. And they start praying to Krishna, like the 10th canto story. The Shura Dakshai Vishnu, in the shore of the ocean of milk. They pray, and Krishna gives them Krishna or Vishnu, because Vishnu and Krishna are the same. He gives them a solution. He says, all right, you can't defeat the demons now, so because you can't defeat them, you should join them. What does it mean, join them? Make a truce. You know, you can't defeat someone, then make friends with them. So you should make a truce, and in order to accomplish your purpose, you should make a deal with them that you're going to churn the milk ocean, and you're going to get Amrit, which you're going to share with each other. Okay. So they go to the demons. Demons are headed up by Bali Maharaj, even at this time. So they go to the demons, and they say, let's make a deal. The demons eventually agree. They churn the milk ocean, and out of the milk ocean comes all sorts of interesting stuff, like Lakshmi, elephants, desire, you know, Kamadenus, all these things come out. And ultimately, out of the milk ocean comes Dhanvantari, the medical incarnation of Krishna. And he's carrying this Amrit, the nectar of immortality. It doesn't actually make people immortal forever and ever, but a long time. So he brings it out, and the demons steal it. You know that story? The demons steal the nectar. And so they're just fighting with each other, because they're in Maya, about who will take the nectar first. So then the demigods, they go to Vishnu again. Is it Vishnu? We have another problem. So problems are there for the demigods to get them to go to Vishnu. Just like ourselves, isn't it? I mean, when we have problems, if we're actually devotees, we go to Krishna and ask for a solution. I mean, if we could do it ourselves, I mean, obviously, if the tire on my car is flat, I don't go to the deities and say, my dear Krishna, please change the tires. You know, obviously, there is certain discrimination insofar as when you go to Vishnu, right? But when all else fails, then you go to the deities. I mean, I have an experience in Fiji that I wanted to make a change of temple president somewhere, and I couldn't get someone out and someone else in. So I had a special sacrifice done to Lord Nrisimhadeva in Mayapur. I paid these two devotees, Jananivas and Pankajanagri, here's some money, do a sacrifice. I'll say, Om Nrisimhaya Namaha, Nrisimhaya Namaha, Nrisimhaya Namaha. And next thing I knew, my purposes were accomplished. Hare Krishna. It worked. But don't do it every day. Just do it when it's something for Krishna's service. Not for money, not for some material aggrandizement. But do it when all else fails. Krishna, help. Krishna, help. You know, help, help. And generally, in my position, I'm doing it to help other people. You know, please help, you know, please take this person out of my... Anyway, so the demigods, they went again to Lord Vishnu and said, Vishnu, we're in trouble. We got the nectar stolen from us. So Vishnu says, no problem, I'll take care of it. So he takes care of it and it becomes this beautiful lady, Mohini Murti, right? And she goes before the demons and the demons say, hey, we love you. You know, that's Maya, you know. It's described when people fall in love, it's like the same brain scan as snorting cocaine. So, that's true. Look it up on the internet. It's not something I just made up as a sannyasi to just like discourage all of you.
So anyway, so the demons say, we trust you. Can you divide the nectar? She even preaches to them and says, how can you trust me? And they say, no, you're beautiful. We trust you. Really logical, you know. Huh? It's really logical to think like that? No, it's not. So anyway, so they trust her. She gives the nectar to the demigods, except, you know, one demon. Rahu sneaks in, gets his head cut off by her with a Sudarshan chakra. And so the demigods take the nectar. However, at that point, the demons become so upset that they ferociously attack the demigods. And they're just like, even defeating the demigods, even though they've taken nectar. And so then the demigods have to go to Vishnu again. See, I'm just illustrating the point, how they just have to keep going, you know, because they realize the limitations of their own power. Most of us, we're very proud. We're proud of our intelligence. You know, just like Queen Kunti says, what, Janmaishwarya Shatasha Shibira Edamana Adapuman, that we're proud of our beauty, intelligence, strength, all the opulences of Bhagavan that we have to a minute degree. So anyway, so they go to Vishnu, and basically Vishnu helps them defeat the demons at this particular point. And there's one demon they have a lot of trouble defeating. His name is Namuchi. That means not dirty. Namuchi. So anyway, so Indra can't defeat him, so finally he's informed that this demon can't be killed by any dry weapon or wet weapon, only can be killed by something that's neither dry nor wet. That's it. Really hard to figure that out, isn't it? So that's foam. He has a foam weapon, and he kills him with a foam weapon. Then, after that, so the demons get defeated, and they're defeated to such an extent that Brahma has to tell the demigods, stop this whole thing. Okay? You know, stop doing this. So then the demons, they go back to their spiritual master. This is basically what we're up to right now. The demons go up to their spiritual master, Shukracharya, which means the seminal spiritual master. And the reason Shukracharya is the demon spiritual master is that there was some competition as to who would be the spiritual master of the demigods, and Shukracharya lost. You know, there was Brihaspati and Shukracharya, and Shukracharya was so envious, he was thinking, if they don't give me the position of being their spiritual master, I'm going to be the spiritual master of their enemies. That's envy, of course. So they go to Shukracharya. Shukracharya brings Bali back to life. He uses this Mrityu Sanjeevani, brings Bali back to life, enlivens all the demons. Bali gets cured. He gets more powerful because of the mercy of his guru, which is interesting. That even if the guru, of course, Shukracharya, you can say he's a demon, but, and he sides with the demons, but he actually worships Vishnu when it's advantageous for him. So they're worshiping Shukracharya, and the demigods, they were very complacent at that point. They stop worshiping their spiritual master so nicely. So this is the whole point of the last verse we read. So because the Brahmins are being worshipped, and Shukracharya is a Brahmin, the demons become more powerful, and they defeat the demigods again. And Brihaspati says to them, as we read today, go hide, because the demons are so powerful. Then in the next chapter, the demigods again go to Vishnu and say, what can we do about it? And actually, one of the demigods, especially the mother of the demigods, who we'll read about in the next few days, Aditi, goes to her husband. And her husband, of course, is Kashyapa. Kashyapa is the father of the demons and the demigods. So he's pretty equal. You know, when they have a family reunion, the demigods and the demons get together and they take prasadam with each other. I said, can imagine a family. Who are your cousin brothers? Well, demons. So anyway, so Aditi goes to Kashyapa. Oh, actually, one thing I forgot to mention. While the demons were fighting with the demigods previously, this is important insofar as what I mentioned about the prequel, then Indra killed two demons. And those two demons were Kalanemi and Vipachiti. And Kalanemi later on became Kamsa, Vipachiti later on became Jarasandha. So I'll tell you why that's important for this whole discussion. So anyway, so Indra goes, Indra disappears, his mother goes to Kashyapa, Kashyapa gives her the information on she prays to Kashyapa, she gets some sacrifice, she gives birth to Lord Vamanadeva, who's described in the next chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the demigods become powerful because Lord Vamanadeva takes everything away from the demons again. I'm not going to tell the whole story because you're going to be reading about that. Then the demons have to run away. But where do they run away to? The earth planet. And therefore, we find at the beginning of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a description that the kings on the earth planet are demoniac because the demons have actually taken birth in Kshatriya families on the earth planet. So this is the beginning of the 10th canto. And so then the demigods in the 10th canto go again to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he says, I'm going to take an incarnation, take birth again. And you should all appear in the Yadu dynasty to assist me in my mission. So this is really connected, the point I'm making is really connected with the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So all these demons that Krishna is killing, and he kills a whole bunch in the Mahabharata war, they're all these demons that are reading, you're reading about in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's why the Mahabharata war was necessary, to get rid of a whole bunch of them at one time. I mean, the demons find all sorts of interesting ways to hide out from the demigods, and the demigods always find ways to go after them. I mean, another time, the demons actually went into the ocean to escape from the demigods. And demigods didn't know what to do because one of their chief demigods, Agni, couldn't enter the ocean. So they asked Agastya Muni to dry up the ocean by drinking the whole thing. So he drinks the whole ocean. The demons get attacked by the demigods, and they ask Agastya Muni to let the ocean out again, and he burps and he's digested the whole ocean. So there's so many interesting stories there in the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Vedic literatures about demons and devotees fighting. And it's really very chivalrous too. It's not just like the modern day fights where there's terrorism and, you know, innocent people like ladies and children are killed. This is a very chivalrous exchange. That means they observe certain rules while they're fighting, and they challenge each other. And another reason for all this demon demigod stuff is that it enables Krishna to come down and enact certain pastimes that he would not execute in the spiritual world. Because in the spiritual world, there's no demons allowed. There's no serious fighting allowed. I mean, sometimes you'll find a devotee acting like a demon, but he is not actually a demon. That's described in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. But in the spiritual world, everybody has to be peaceful, just like in the temple room. If you want to fight a devotee, don't do it in the temple room. You have to say to the devotee, please step outside for a few minutes. Is it? Let's say, you know, Rupa's there, I get really angry at Rupa. Let's have a fight. But not in front of the deities, it's offensive. So let's step outside. So Krishna does the same thing when he wants to have a chivalrous exchange or fight with people who are ostensibly demons, but actually they're devotees like Jayant Vijay. He says to them basically, you know, Jayant Vijay, he says, step outside for a few minutes. Because Krishna enjoys different exchanges, like the indirect rasas that you can read about in the Nectar of Devotion, like anger, ghastliness, you know, chivalry, fear. There's seven indirect rasas. Everyone's read about that? Yeah. So Krishna enjoys that. So therefore, these demon demigod stuff, that's necessary so that Krishna can have all these wonderful exchanges in the material world. So that's why we have these two opposing forces. I've given a brief overview, and then also a brief overview of the prequel to the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So any questions or comments? I know we spoke about a lot today. Yes, Operation.
With Duvasa Muni,
yeah.
Is it word to describe him temperamental?
Yeah. Durvas, I mean, vas can mean face or temperament, and dur means bad temperament. But actually, he's a pure devotee of Krishna. And this is, he's an expansion of Lord Shiva. Like, Lord Shiva is Ashutosh. You've heard that word before? Ashutosh means easily pleased, easily angered. So you want to please Lord Shiva? It's very easy. I can tell you how to please Lord Shiva. Give him some prasadam from Krishna. You think you'll please him any other way? Cutting the skin off like a vrikasura, cutting your head off? That doesn't please him. Take some mahaprasadam and offer it to Lord Shiva. They do that in Bhubaneswara. They take Lord Jagannath's mahaprasadam and transport it from Jagannath Puri to Bhubaneswara every day, and Lord Shiva is very happy there. There's a story in the Chaitanya Mangal, how Lord Shiva got mahaprasadam. He started dancing so ecstatically that he was going to destroy the universe, and Durga stops him, and she asks for some, and he says, "You're not qualified. Because you're just Maya. You're in Maya, and you are Maya." So, and therefore she causes the Lord to offer prasadam to all of us. So, anyway, so that's Durvas. He tests his devotees. I mean, and there's so many stories about Durvas and Muni. Yeah. That's a good question. Well, that's easy. What do they say? There's this saying, "I've seen the enemy, and the enemy is us." So, demons means the anarthas for us: lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy. Envy is a big one. That, you know, we see someone doing something nicely, we say, "Yeah, I can do it better than him." That's nonsense. So, we have to be introspective. You know, it's easy to find fault in others. Like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, "I am finding fault in others because I myself am pockmarked with the same faults." That means full of those same faults. So the reason we find a specific fault in others is because we have them. That's called projection. You know, we project our concept on others. We think that he or she is acting in a certain way because I would act in that way because of a certain mentality. But actually, that's projecting. So we should be compassionate to others like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, and look for fault in ourselves. At the same time, we don't want to become so depressed that we find so many faults in ourselves. I'm just, you know, I'm useless, hopeless, a demon. Forget it. I'm going to go out and enjoy the material world. We don't want to think like that. Actually, we were speaking last night, we gave this one quote that humility means not to think less of yourself, but to think of yourself less. You follow that? So in other words, if we start to think on how to serve others, then that will help us conquer. Like if we have some animosity towards others, then you should serve that person. If you feel envious of someone or angry with someone, why don't you serve them? So, yes, we have these anarthas in ourselves, and that's what we should do. And Kali Yuga, the demon, is inside here. And when we look at other people, that's another important point. We don't label people demons. Because once you label a person a demon, you can't really deal with them anymore in a compassionate way. We understand they are part and parcel of Krishna. They're an illusion. They're suffering. They're our brothers and sisters. So we have to help them. So immature devotees go out sometimes and they just call everybody a demon. It's not so helpful for presenting Krishna consciousness. So demons with it. But in the case of the demons and demigods, that was obvious. That was the Daityas, the Danavas, and the Adityas. You know, so obviously that was their name. Like if someone has the name, "What's your name?" "Demon." Then you can call them demon. "What's your gotra?" Asura. "Okay, Mr. Demon, it's nice to meet you." But even though Bali Maharaj was a demon, like by the gotra, you know, by his family, He wasn't a demon internally. I mean, he was a great pure. He's the Bali Maharaj. I'm talking about Bali Maharaj. Yeah. Well, that's another. You're going to get to that story. I'm not going to tell you the story beforehand. But because Bali Maharaj was a demon, and a demon, even Pallad Maharaj was a demon family. He was in charge of the demons. It's interesting, isn't it? Pallad Maharaj was considered, as family ties, a demon, and he was in charge of the demons. And Vibhishan also. He's in charge of the demons, the Rakshasas. But they're not demons, in essence. You know, in essence, they're devotees of the Lord. So Bali Maharaj is renowned because he is the example of Atmanivedanam, surrender to Krishna. Like you mentioned, Krishna, put your foot on my head, push me down. Okay, any other questions or comments? Yes? Yeah. No, you serve them by giving them Krishna consciousness. It's not that you serve them by saying, I'll do whatever you say. There's a difference. Like a parent serves the child, not by listening to the child. You know, the child, if the child said to the parent, you know, give me chocolates. Just like last night, I was distributing chocolates to the children. And they were in ecstasy. I mean, I had so many friends after that. They said, oh, he's the best sannyasi. We want to be sannyasis when we grow up. Even the girls were saying that. So, I mean, if I was to say, I'm your servant, my dear kid, feed me chocolates all day long. But to be the person's servant, you have to understand what's good for them and do what's good for them. Just like the spiritual master has to think that I'm here to serve the disciples. I'm a servant of 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 the Lord who maintains the gopis in Vrindavan, Bhavibharata, Padakamala. So that's the attitude. And when we have that attitude, rather than being the master, the opposite of that is the master. Ishwaroham Ahambam Yisidoham Bhagavan Sukhi. You had a question?
Oh, so you talk about demons, so I didn't catch the rest of the conversation.
Okay.
But if you say the demon is not a demon in essence, so what actually makes a demon a demon?
The attitude that, the quote, the verse I just mentioned, Ishwaroham Aham Bhogi Siddhoham Bhagavan Sukhi, if someone's thinking, I'm perfect, I'm powerful, I'm happy, that is the demoniac mentality. But one who understands that, you know, I'm subservient to God, I'm meant to serve God, I'm meant to serve everybody, I should be compassionate, I shouldn't hate anybody, that's a devotee's mentality. A real devotee doesn't hate anyone. In the Ishupanishad, there's this nice verse, Yastu Sarvani Bhutane Anmane Nvanam Pashati. Sarvabhuteshu Chatmanam Tatonam Vigigupshate. One who is actually connected with Krishna loves everybody, doesn't hate anyone or anything. So if we're feeling hate, we got problems. Anybody who's feeling like they're cringing up with hate or envy, that's a problem. Yeah.
Sometimes they make facetious comments and they're like winding me off all the time sometimes and I get really annoyed and I just...
They're not winding yourself. You're winding... You are winding yourself up. Take responsibility. Nobody can wind you up.
Well, I keep saying all these remarks and it's...
Well, that's their issue. That's... You should feel compassionate.
You up, but like if you let them, then like...
Yeah. You should feel compassionate. If someone is trying to do that, let's say they actually are trying to do that, we're compassionate. That's causing their own suffering. You can only cause your suffering, and people can cause their own suffering. And if someone's, let's say, hypercritical or trying to stir up something in me, that's their problem. I don't own their problem. I own my own problems. And my challenge in that circumstance is to love them. What did Haridas Thakur do when he was being whipped in 22 marketplaces? He was feeling compassion for the people who were whipping him because they were in trouble. They were going to get killed because they didn't kill him. And he said, what can I do to help you? I'm paraphrasing, of course. And they said, you're not dead. We got problems. He said, okay, I can solve your problem. So he went into a trance and made believe he was dead. They threw him in the river. He got out a few kilometers later, started chanting again. but he solved their problem. So he was feeling, I mean, that's like paraduka dukhi. That's what we should be aspiring for. So when I take it as a test for my compassionate level of Krishna consciousness. So of course, what I suggest is if you're finding yourself getting wound up, as the saying goes, take a time out. Just don't stay in the situation and get wound up. You're winding me up. Just like you say, I gotta take a walk and chant Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, what should I do? And then you can figure it out. So sometimes a timeout is the best situation. Yes.
It's nice to do that, like, but what, if you're working, you're kind of just like, I can't just like wander off and chant Hare Krishna. If someone doesn't understand what I'm doing, they're like, oh, she's being lazy. She's just choosing to like walk away because she doesn't want to deal with it, so she's just going off.
Like, then you have to do a timeout internally.
Oh, okay.
You put your body on automatic and you do your work and you take a timeout. Automatically, and just think, Krishna, what is Krishna teaching? Krishna's arranged this circumstance. What is he teaching me? What do I have to do? And we know the goal is to be compassionate and loving with everybody. You had a question?
It's just that I find sometimes difficult to understand Bali Maharaj, the same as genuine energy.
Well, he became a pure devotee when he surrendered everything. But a lot of this enmity that you see in Bali Maharaj, that you think is enmity, is actually chivalry. Just like two friends may be playing a game on opposite sides of a football match. And don't they sometimes call each other names? Did you ever see that? You know, you rascal! I hate you! I mean, I remember playing volleyball. That's my game. Anyway, what can I say? You know, my age, that's the game I can play. So I'm playing volleyball with the devotees. And you know, some of their disciples are just, you rascal, I'm going to kill you. You know, you can't really take it literally that I hate them. It's just a chivalrous exchange. So that's what's going on with Bali, too. That he's, you know, it's chivalrous. I mean, yes, he becomes a pure devotee when Vamana takes everything away from him. But still, he's in a pure devotee family. Prahlad Maharaj is agreeing with his actions. You know, his granddad is there. You know, imagine grandfather Prahlad. Hey, Pitamaha, you know, that's Hindi, of course. Dad, or granddad, what should I do? You know, he's taking advice. So, obviously, Prahlad Maharaj would be telling him, hey, stop fighting with the demigods. Cool it. Cool it, kid, you know. So, this, he doesn't say that. Because it's a chivalrous exchange. So, you know, I'm very hesitant to find fault with Bali to say, because he's a great devotee. And actually, the point is, if someone's a great devotee, you don't really dwell on what they were in the past. So I'm cautious about that particular thing. But I know it's chivalry that they're engaged in. I think we have to end now because we really overstayed our welcome, according to the notice over there. Okay, thank you very much for giving class tomorrow. All glories to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada. I want to thank everyone who's joining us online, too. Devotees from Fiji, Rupanuga, Mayapur from Hawaii, Krishnanandini from Sydney. We got Sachi Mata from Sydney, Radharani from New Zealand. We got people from Saki from Fiji, Nandagopal from Canada, Jai Radhika, Bhavin Patel, Narayani from Sydney. Anyway, so many people, I can't mention them all for watching us. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. We're here in New Govardhan.